Well, I wanted to share that reading from Edith Wharton because I stumbled upon it completely by chance in a little book of sort of the garden through the four seasons. And I couldn't pass up the opportunity to bring such beauty as her writing, even if the connection to the sermon message is a little tangential. But sometimes we have a need for finding balance in our lives, we have a need for not for more challenging content, but to be rested, to be nourished, to be soothed by beauty, to be reminded by the gifts of this earthly embodied life that's all around us. The passage in Aromatic June, which Steve read for us, reminded me very much of a recent morning when I visited the woods in Millennium Park. And it was a warm mid-morning leaning toward noon. And it was leaning toward June also. And it was very strangely quiet in the park, sort of a lull in human and canine activity. And perhaps because of the lull in all of that activity in the way of visitors, the wild residents of the park, both creaturely and vegetative, were all the more in evidence. The birds were making a gorgeous symphony of sounds, singing their tiny hearts out, and the pollinators were buzzing, and the butterflies were flittering in the pollen-flecked air, and the cinnamon ferns were unfurling, the brambles were blooming, and the frogs were splashing. And everywhere was that bubbling of sap and slipping of sheaths and bursting of calyxes that Wharton describes. And as I took the dirt path into the woods, I was delighted with some unexpected meetings. A brown garter snake, a wild turkey strolling across the path, and the special surprise of a big black water snake who was snoozing in a patch of sunshine and slid off into a pool of swamp water and glided away into a forest of yellow flag iris leaves in the swamp. And everywhere was the delicious, spicy, earthy, floral, sappy, musky smell of spring's abundance. So why is it so healing for us, so calming and life-giving to rest for a time in nature's intricate harmony? Why do we experience natural harmony as beautiful? The Flower Communion is a time when we come together in that celebration. It's a time for us to reflect, I think particularly on our seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism, that being our recognition of the interconnected web of all life, of all existence in which we're a part. So on Flower Communion Sunday, we share in an explicit ritual of giving and receiving, and it's a fitting moment to contemplate the nature of connection and the interconnectedness of nature. It's an opportunity to remember that being part of the web of relationship is inescapable and essential to our very beings, and yet also to remember that we really have to work at being in conscious relationship. So even though interdependence may be the nature of reality, it doesn't necessarily come naturally to us to be interdependent. So with this principle of interdependence in the background, this morning I offer a reverie on the subject of harmony, disharmony, and the collaborative spirit that's part of being a creative community of faith. So in recent weeks, I've witnessed both the most brilliant constructive collaborations of particular teams within the church and also some breakdowns in relationship and in collaboration that have left some people feeling disoriented or confused. And so the question of what makes for creative harmony in our life together as a community has been on my mind. The Sufi Hazrat Inayat Khan was a master musician. Hazrat Inayat Khan was a master musician as well as a mystic, and he often used the ideas of vibration, tuning, harmony, and rhythm from the world of music to describe the nature of life and of spiritual development. And he said that beauty isn't something that you can point to outside of yourself. Rather, beauty comes from the subjective experience of harmony, the relational experience of harmony. So something is beautiful because it's in right relationship, in it to its time and place. It's beautiful because its parts are in right relationship to each other. So there isn't some universal standard of beauty. It's always in context, and it's always in relationship. He also said that the natural tendency of every soul is toward harmony. In other words, we feel a sense of beauty when we are experiencing ourselves as harmonized, when harmony resonates within ourselves, with others, and with our environment. We feel a sense of aesthetic pleasure, a sense of rightness, a sense of being at home in the universe. We feel drawn to this at-homeness. We need it, and we long for it at a soul level. And yet we're not only souls who feel at home in a sea of harmonious connection. We're also unique egos, unique persons, every one of us, sometimes counterdependent, sometimes disharmonious. We each are called to forge an identity, each capable of sounding our own particular note or expressing our own splash of color. We each need to be somehow distinguished, to be heard, to be witnessed as individuals. And so both harmony and disharmony have their place, and they have their limitations. All harmony all the time would lead to numbness, would lead to an overly polite, static environment. It would be too safe. Because taking scary risks and disagreeing and confronting, doing something that is taboo, asserting one's freedom, breaking through barriers and addressing tensions are all part of the path of transformation. They're all part of the path to a more abundant life and a more abundant society. But too much disharmony, too much self-assertion, or counterdependent behavior that dishonors the holy ground of relationship is corrosive to our creative process and to our growth. So conflict that erupts without any kind of covenantal safety net, it erodes our bonds, our spiritual bonds, our bonds of trust. It undermines the very spirit of community that we seek when we come together. So how do we balance the paradoxical need for both harmony and dissonance in the process of being a creative, collaborative, searching community? The New Haven architect Barry Spiegels has just written a book called Collaboration. And I've not been able to get my hands on the book itself, but there were excerpts of it that were published in a recent issue of the journal Parabola. And in the excerpts that were cited, Spiegels lifts up a triad that of qualities that contributes to the process of collaboration: humor, candor, and trust. Of humor, he says, perhaps the most obvious attribute of a successful collaborative group is that they laugh together. Is it humor that opens people up or openness that allows people to laugh? However it happens, we're nourished by the levity of our collaborative conspirators as we engage in the imperatives of our work. When the conversation turns contentious, we need to find perspective. And what better vantage point than our good humor? A good friend once remarked that whimsy is the most powerful force in the universe. Invite it in. And when it comes to trust, we can imagine that trust is the essential basis for all good collaboration. Trust must be generously given to others, but it also needs to be consistently earned. And it must be intentionally nourished by a collaborative group, by the collaborative group, as a sacred flame at the center of their work together. We know that a whole range of influences contributes to the establishment of trust between people, and we know that all kinds of factors can erode trust, such as preconceived ideas about what can and cannot be done, or what is acceptable or good or wrong, judgments about other people's abilities, suspicions about hidden agendas. We all bring our personal baggage into the room from the very, very beginning. Spiegels writes, "It's because of these things, this is why concerns, suspicions, and unspoken criticisms must be articulated and resolved at the outset. To do this is to affirm the terms of an honest enterprise, a trustworthy exchange. It must include every individual and their point of departure. Confidence in the process begins here, and it will flourish if it's openly pursued." And finally, I appreciated Spiegel's use of the word candor as the third element in this triad. Candor, that quality of honest, simple directness, is a factor that nourishes trust and is nourished by humor. Candor captures that quality of creative disharmony that I was trying to get at, but in a very constructive and neutral way. Spiegel writes, "Even where the collaborative spirit is abundant, the penetrating voice of candor is often silent. For many reasons, we don't often receive rigorous criticism from those knowledgeable enough to provide it. Many do not want to speak out of turn. But as Richard Saul Wurman tells us, stop saying, when you really don't know. Ask questions. It's up to us and to our leadership to create an environment that grants permission to ask challenging questions. To succeed, we must be able to both invite and sustain the honesty that our work demands." In my experience and observations of our work together in Theodore Parker Church, it does seem that these three elements, humor, candor, and trust, to the extent to which they are present or absent, shape the degree of joy and satisfaction that people derive from their collaborative work together and its outcomes. Humor, candor, and trust, when they infuse collaboration, can give rise to that synergistic experience that we might call harmony or beauty or belonging. And sometimes these qualities arise naturally in the chemistry of a group, but sometimes they have to be practiced more intentionally. So as I anticipate my separation from you, the congregation, in six more weeks, I have confidence in your capacity for successful, creative collaboration, because I've seen it manifested many, many times. But I also encourage you to be as conscious and intentional as you possibly can about creating an environment for that, recognizing that it does not always simply happen naturally. In fact, successful creative collaboration often doesn't simply happen. Taking for granted that the ingredients are always there and that this is always a space where humor and candor and trust can flourish can blind us to the places where the opposite may be happening. The conversations that make for trust have to be practiced with gentle purposefulness. And so as you go forward together, creating your future together, as you welcome new seekers into the circle of membership, as you make major decisions together, as you strive to bring more abundance and beauty into this embodied life, I pray that you may keep your eyes open, your ears and your hearts open and awake to what an honest harmony asks of you, and to accept upon yourselves the worthy demand of that sacred work. May it be so. And so I invite